How does Frank define success right now?
You know, I was watching a documentary the other day, and it had a quote by Bob Dylan, and he said, "A man is a success if he gets up in the morning and gets to bed at night, and in between, he does whatever he wants to do." I thought that was interesting. One minister, an old minister, once told me that the size of your ministry will be based on how much courage you have. And A.W. Tozer, I read a biography of his, he made this statement that stuck out to me. He said, "You concentrate on deepening your ministry and God will widen it." I can't speak for other people or tell them, you know, what their ultimate measure of success is. But for me, success is when I am faithful now to produce the things the Lord has put on my heart to create despite the outward results. And the older I get, Josh, I didn't always have this view now, but the older I get, I seek to live my days for an audience of one. And here's how I view it. Have you ever watched The Truman Show with Jim Carrey? I'm Jim Carrey in The Truman Show. Well, you need to see it. It's quite a movie. And I'll just say this because you can go back and watch it. But I'm Jim Carrey in The Truman Show. The main difference is that Ed Harris is not the one who's orchestrating my surroundings and situations. It's the true and living God. And Jim Carrey was blissfully unaware that his whole world was being orchestrated and observed by Ed Harris, all right, and arranged by him. Where in my case, I'm consciously aware that the living God, my Lord, is the one who is both observing and orchestrating my circumstances. And within that, there is free will. And so consequently, for me, I'm successful when I am faithful to the one who has put various things on my heart to produce and create, regardless of what the outcome is. Because my ultimate goal is to please the one who made me, who created me, who called me. And this is a related issue that I'd like to pivot toward, but a problem that paralyzes many creators, whether they're in the ministry space or the business space, is the peril of waiting until their work is perfect in order to launch it. I mean, this is huge. And I have never created a book. I've never delivered a message. I've never created a podcast episode. I've never done an interview like this one that was perfect. I have waited until it's good enough to release. But for me, good enough is a pretty high standard. This is kind of a peek into my own work, okay, or how I operate. If I see something in the Christian world that begs for an explanation, and boy, there's a ton of them from my view, what I do is I investigate it and then I experiment with solutions. And then when I find a solution that has worked in my own life, and that takes some time, it's at that point, once it's worked in my life, that I write about it or I speak about it. But I test it first in my own life. And so all of my work has one thing in common. It's designed to solve problems that many Christians face today. And that work originates from an experiential posture, not a theoretical one. So if I haven't tested it in my own life and it hasn't worked for me, then I don't release it. And so this shifts the focus on outcomes to what am I doing that I feel joy and peace about? Do I feel joy and peace in releasing it? Like I'm going to release a podcast episode tomorrow. All right. And of course, when this airs, it will already have been put out into the world. The podcast episode is very different from anything I've ever done, Josh. Okay. It's on a topic I don't talk about. I'm really not interested in it. But somebody told me about a book called How to Defend Yourself Against Alien Abduction. And I laughed out loud when I heard the book because I thought it was a spoof book. I got a copy of it from the Interlibrary Loan and I read it. I skimmed and dipped, really, is what I did. I found it fascinating because one of the ways that people who claim to have been abducted by aliens, the way they have gotten out of it, relates to something in the New Testament very powerfully. And I found that fascinating. And so the episode is broken up into two parts. The first part is very serious. And I talk about what I found in the book, what I discovered from the book. That's fascinating. But the other part is spoof. And I find it hilarious. Only two people on the planet have heard it before it's gone live. And I don't normally do this. I don't normally, you know, have people review things before I put them out, at least podcasts. Well, one person, I won't say who they are, but I know them both. One person was a male. He thought it was brilliant. He thought it was hilarious. He thought it was clever. The other person didn't find it funny at all. It was a yawn. The spoof part I'm talking about. I'm still going to put it out. I'm still going to put it out. You know, if we line up 100 people, right, and only two of them find it funny, I will still take joy and pleasure in it because I find it hilarious. Okay, the spoof part now. So really, I don't measure my work based on how many people loved it, how many people hated it. You know, that's not my compass. And I know you want to talk about reassurance at some point, and we can get into that. I have some insight into that that has helped me. But basically, getting back to the original question, I test it first in my life before I release it to others. It will have the weight of experience behind it. And I think that is something lacking in our world today, because everybody claims to be an expert. And in the Christian world, passing things from frontal lobe to frontal lobe, from notebook to notebook, without the weight of experience behind it is pervasive. And to have something that has come out of somebody's own experience is pretty rare today. And I have a whole chapter on this principle in the book, 48 Laws of Spiritual Power, because I see it so often, especially among preachers, Josh, to taste test it before you give a message or you write something. It's exotically rare, actually. So anyway, that's how I would answer that question.
Yeah. And isn't that because, Frank, we live in a culture, especially if you're a preacher, you have to come up with something every Sunday. And that's the culture of, I got to find a new topic to speak on.
Yeah, I can talk a lot about that. What lots of pastors and preachers do on Saturday night, it would mortify a lot of the listeners. Not all of them, folks. I'm not taking a dig at pastors, but many of them have confessed the hot sweats they experience on a Saturday night because they don't have anything to preach.
Joy and peace. You talked about joy and peace. Frank, what if you have a message that is tough to give, if it's challenging to give? Is there still joy and peace with that if you feel you have to release something to the body, or you just have to release something that you feel called to that actually challenges someone? Do you still go, and are you still guided by that joy and peace?
You're speaking to my world because my work is on the edges. You know, my work pushes the envelope. I would have to say that for me, it is still a matter of life and peace, even though you might have trepidation in sharing it, you know, because the more controversial it will be, the more people will lash out at you, especially in our world today, the social media saturated world that's obsessed with outrage. And outrage is, you know, noble. You're going to get shot at for sure. And so if you do have a message that is going to polarize people, or you do have a message that's going to be controversial, you cannot be a person that has thin skin or that is afraid. And you can have, if you're a Christian now, you have the life and the peace. I'm speaking of Romans 8. It's a mark of the Spirit's leading that you have life and peace internally. You can still bring that message and share it with boldness and passion, no matter where the chips fall. But again, you have to be willing to overcome that fear and act in spite of the fear. You know, courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is the ability to act in spite of, regardless of the fear, and to be willing to accept the consequences. You know, one thing I say to people, if they want to make a change, if they want to make an impact, okay, a real impact, if you're not having people walk out of the theater at some point at what you have said or written, then you're hiding. You're allowing fear to grip you. And fear is the force that's behind so much of what keeps creators from creating. You know, procrastination, the root behind that is typically fear. The unwillingness to launch whatever it is, a message, a piece of writing, it's often fear. All of these things, you know, writer's block is at the bottom of it, rooted in fear. Nobody has talker's block. right? You can talk to somebody and ask them questions. They're going to answer. They don't say, Josh, I'm sorry, I can't answer that question. I've got talker's block. No, writer's block is steeped in fear. So fear is something that must be overcome by anybody who wants to make an impact, create meaningful work that's going to not go viral. That's not the name of the game here, but to actually transform a group of people. Right? Some people. Now, if your work is for everyone, and that's what you're shooting for, you want popularity, you want to be a celebrity. Well, first of all, you're going to be severely disappointed because what it takes to do that are things that often mean you have to compromise. But the other part of it is, if you create work that's for everybody, for the masses, it's going to be average, it's going to be mediocre, it's going to be common. But if you want to make an impact that really is going to be remarkable, wherein a certain segment of the population can't help but remark on it, right? Because it's so different and unique and powerful and transformative, it's going to push the edges. You're going to be dancing on the edges. You're going to be pushing an envelope and you're going to be offending some people. That's just the nature of it. And, you know, I give you exhibit A and B, Paul of Tarsus and Jesus of Nazareth. They had remarkable ministries. It wasn't for the masses. No way. I mean, you look at the people who followed Jesus during his lifetime and even after he ascended, you're talking about 120 people. Most of the churches that Paul raised up, 50 people, 45 to 50 people, most of them, right? And the masses of the Gentile world and the Jewish world of the first century did not respond to the gospel positively. Yeah, so this gets back to, who are you creating your work for? Why are you creating it, right? Whether it's in the ministry space or the business space, those questions are important to explore because it will determine the kind of impact you are going to make. And it will also determine who is attracted to it and also who attacks it.
Wow, guys, that was so powerful. What Frank is sharing is something that you really need to get and apply in your life, because you're not called to the whole world, but you are called to your world. And what do I mean by that is that you have a specific sphere of influence. You have connections right now. You have relationships that you are called to influence where you are.